We're holding on Nun Amr Aleph, third line. We talked yesterday about Takonis Usha, about a couple of Takonis the Chachamim made while, during the time when the Sanhedrin was headquartered in the city of Usha in the north of Eretz Yisrael. We're talking a couple of decades after Churban Bayis Sheni. So the first one we mentioned was a takana that a person has to continue supporting his children past the age of six until they develop shtei sidus. And we discussed, is that in fact binding lahalacha? We said not really. Beis Din or the local rov or whatever will work on convincing and putting social pressure on a person to do that. Good morning, Ellie. But they're not going to actually be able to force the mitzad adin to do that. Then we talked about another takana that they made in Usha about that if a person writes a document giving away all his property while he's alive, then he and his wife are still entitled to be supported from that property. So now continuing on that topic, Amr Rav Ila, the Usha Hiskinu. Here's another takana that the Chachamim made in Usha. Hamavazbez al yivazbez yos mechomish. When a person is spending his money on tzedakah, Shita Mukubetis actually brings a Mahadura Kama, an earlier version of Rashi that he found in a manuscript that says that we're talking about when he's giving to Hektish, but the Rashi that we have in front of us says we're talking about he's giving to Tzedakah, to poor people. Anyway, Al Yavazbez, Yosmir Chomish, they made a takana that he shouldn't spend more than one-fifth of his possessions. Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi that the first year that a person is independent, then he gives a fifth of what he has then. Every year after that, he can give up to a fifth of the profits that he makes. Gilyan Ashas, actually, Rav Akiva Eger, refers to the same Yerushalmi that says something else as well, that this isn't an original idea that the Chachamim and Usha came up with. This is something that they knew previously, and then they had forgotten. So now the Chachamim and Usha talked about it and voted on it again, and it turned out that they came up with the exact same figure as had been the earlier halacha. And the Gemara says, "Tanya Amihochi." We learn similarly in a brisa, "Hamavazbez ayuvazbez yosim mechomish." When a person is spending money on tzedakah, he shouldn't spend more than 1/5, 20%. Shemi yitzarech labrias, because otherwise he himself may become poor and require tzedakah from others. In fact, it happened once one of the Chachamim was going to spend more than 20% on tzedakah, and his colleague did not allow it. So the Gemara says, Umanu, who is that who was going to spend it, who was going to spend more than 20% on tzedakah, and his colleague, another Chacham, stopped him, is Rabbi Yesheva. So Rabbi Yesheva was going to do that, and one of the other Chachamim told him not to. Va'amilo, the one version is that Rabbi Yesheva is the chaver who told him not to do that because of Takanas Usha. But Amrilo, others say it was the other way around. Rabbi Yesheva, that it was Rabbi Yesheva who was going to spend more than 20%. Well, he nicha chavere, and his colleague didn't let him. Umanu, and according to that, who was the colleague, Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva told him not to. Now, with that said, though, the Alter Rebbe stresses in a number of places in Tanya that all of that only applies when a person, now we're using the expression of Iyam Vazbez, that a person is spending it, and the word bizbuz spent suggests kind of that a person is spending it without a particular reason. He's just spending because he wants to give tzedakah because he knows there are poor people out there. So then we're saying there should be a limit. However, the Alter Rebbe points out in a number of places in Tanya, you can have a case where a person is giving tzedakah because of various averus or semi-averus or whatever that he did, where in principle he should have to be fasting a certain number of days because of that, and instead he's redeeming those fasts by giving tzedakah instead. There, the Alter Rebbe says a number of times that never mind this limit of 20%, the same way as a person wouldn't limit themselves 20% when they're spending on their health, on their physical health, on doctors or medicines or what have you, the same way a person shouldn't limit themselves to 20% when it comes on spending money for the health of their neshama. So again, it's not obviously not contradicting the Gemara over here. The Alter Rebbe is not contradicting the Gemara, but he's saying that the Gemara over here is talking about where he's spending it without a particular cause, where it's not specifically necessary for him to give tzedakah for some other reason, such as because to clean up avedas that he did, whereas Alter Rebbe is talking about when he does. Also, by the way, later on, on Daf Samach Zayin, we're going to have something where Mar Ukva gave away half his money to Tzedakah, and the Gemara explains that's different because that was right before he passed away. Given that the reason over here that the Gemara is saying why you shouldn't give more than 20% is because then the person himself might become poor and require Tzedakah, well, when he's doing it right before he passed away, that's not going to be an issue. So therefore, Gesunta Hate, let him give as much as he wants. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Nachman, the Ikemer of Achaba Yaakov, my Kura, where is a pasuk that expresses this point? Now, if it was a Takana of Usha, then there's not necessarily going to be a pasuk for it, but the Gemara is assuming, as first of all, like we said, the Yerushalmi says it was really an old halacha, just they had forgotten it, and now the Chachamim and Usha have to reestablish it. And the Maharam Shif says in a similar vein that the Chachamim have to have something, the Chachamim have to have something to base themselves on. In other words, before that it was known that there's something about 20%. The Chachamim and Usha are saying don't go beyond 20%. So the question is, where's a pasuk that indicates that 20% is a good amount to give to tzedakah anyway? So the answer is because the pasuk says, Yaakov says at the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, "V'cholah shetiten li, everything that you give to me, aser aasrenu loch, meiser, I will meiser it for you." So aser means 10%, and aasrenu means another 10%. So therefore, there's your 20%. So the Gemara asks, why? V'cholah dami isura basra, isura kama. If you think about it, if you're giving the meiser, and then you're giving meiser again, then you don't have full 20%. Because what are you doing? You start out, let's say, with 100. So you take meiser from it, that's 10. Now you have left 90. Now, if you take out meiser from that 90, it's not 10, it's 9. So therefore, altogether, you're given 19, not 20. So you should say the maximum is 19%. Rav Ashi answers, yes, but when Yaakov uses the expression, asrenu, when he says, I will meiser it, whereas instead he could have said, aser aaser loch, and then you'd be right. It means a meiser, and then a meiser of what's left. But now he's saying, asrenu, I will give meiser from it, implying labasra kikama, implying that I'll give the meiser the second time exactly the same as the first. So it won't just be 10 and then 9, it'll be 10 and then another 10. So that brings us to the concept of choymesh, and that's what we're saying, that in Usha, they made the takana that you shouldn't go beyond. Marsha brings over here a remez. He says v'cholah shetiten li. We know that Yaakov was satisfied with whatever he had. That's why he says yeshli koil, whereas Esav said yeshli rov, that I want more and more. And so Yaakov is saying that out of that koil, out of that 50 that you give me, then aser asrenu loch, I'll give meiser. I'll give altogether 10 out of it, which is meiser on top of meiser. 10 out of 50 is 20%. Okay. So now we have three things that Rabbi Ila brought that they made takonis in Usha. We had, again, the first one about supporting his children when they're young, the second one about the person writes away his nechassim, and this one about the maximum amount to give to tzedakah. So Amr of Shinu Ba'ashi is Shmur's halalah mismatis v'hochus. These teachings of Rabbi Ila's are getting less and less in the sense that the first one, about the supporting the children, Rav Ila said in the name of Rish Lakish, who said in the name of Rav Yehuda Bachinna, or Rav Yosi Bachanina, it says on the side, we're going to have actually at the bottom of the Amud, that it is Rav Yosi Bachanina. Anyway, so the first one was in the name of Sri Amiroi. The second one, about where the person writes a document giving away all his nechassim, was Rav Ila in the name of Rish Lakish and stopping there. And the third one was just Rav Ila by himself. So it's getting less and less as you go through these things that he says that were decided in Usha, then you have fewer and fewer Amiroyim involved. The Simonach, and you Simon to remember the order, you can think of the expression, Ktanim Kosvu Uvizbazu. Literally it means children wrote and spent, but it means those are key words for each of these three things. Ktanim is that he should support his children when they're ktanim. Kosvo is the akosav nechosav, and bizbizu is the samavazbiz ayivazbiz yos mechomish. So this way it helps you remember the order that it's going from largest to smallest, three amiroyim, then two amiroyim, and then one, only one. Now let's talk about other things that the Chachamim were masakin in Usha. Amar of Yitzchak, but Usha hiskinu. Here's another thing the Chachamim made at Takana when the Sanhedrin was in Usha. Sheyehe odem misgalgal in bnoi ad shteim esrei shana. That a person should go easy with his son if the son doesn't want to learn Torah. So the father, yigalgal, means to roll, but it means like go easy with him, try to convince him, try to give him rewards, try to whatever, until he reaches 12 years old. A lot of things in this sugya, by the way, a lot of the things that we talk about ages in this sugya, there is some discussion among the Rishonim whether we mean until he actually reaches that birthday or when he reaches the beginning of that year. So, for example, when we're saying 12 over here, do we mean that he turns 12 years old, the year before his bar mitzvah, or do we mean when he turns 11 and is now entering his 12th year? Anyway, so up to that point, if the kid doesn't want to learn, then you try to be gentle with him and try to persuade him and bribe him to do it or whatever. Mikan ve'elach, after that, if the kid doesn't want to learn, yurid imer l'chayev, then you go down to his life with him. Which means Rashi says you whip him, you take away food from him or whatever. You start being harsh with him. You better learn, or there are going to be consequences. Marshall gives a different explanation. Also, Yerid Imel Chayev could be the father is seeing, okay, the kid doesn't really want to learn Torah, so fine, let me start teaching him a trade. Let me start teaching him something that he'll eventually do for Parnassa. That's also considered Chayev. Tosfos, by the way, mentions, now we say in Pirkei Avos that we have Ben Chomesh Shanim L'Mikra, which we're going to discuss about soon, and then Ben Esser Shanim L'Mishnah. At 10 years old, the kid is supposed to start learning Mishnah. Here we're talking about 12. But again, Tosfos says that what it means is that beginning at age 10, or when he's entering his 10th year, whatever, then you start convincing him that it's time to start learning Mishnayos. And if he does, then good. And if not, then you keep on working on convincing him for the next 2 years until he reaches 12, and then we're saying over here, Yerudim Elchayim. So the Gemara says, Amy, is that so, that you wait until 12 to start putting pressure on him? V'ha'omalei Rav l'Rav Shmuel bar Shilas, didn't Rav say to Rav Shmuel bar Shilas? Rav Shmuel bar Shilas was one of the Amiroyim, but he also, he worked as a Malach. So Rav is giving him instructions that a Malamed needs to know. And he tells him, Batsir mi bar shis, when a boy is less than 6 years old, loy to kabel, don't accept him into your class, because he's too young to be in class yet. And again, does six over here mean 6 full years old, or does it mean in his 6th year? We'll talk about that soon. Bar shis, once he's 6 years old, or in his 6th year, kabel, then Rav Shmuel bar Shilas, you can accept him into your class. The stuffy like a Torah, and stuff him with Torah like an ox, like the way you take an ox and you stuff it and you stuff food down its throat. The same way over here, you stuff the kids full of knowledge of Torah. So we see already that at age 6 or at age 5, which is the beginning of the 6th year, you're already starting to stuff them with as much Torah in as possible. So what are you telling me that you wait? Until 12, in order that you wait until, what are you telling me? You wait until 12 to do that. Marsha explains, by the way, the metaphor is when you're feeding an ox. So the ox can't eat that much on its own. You have to essentially stuff it down its throat. So the same way the kid at this age, he's not going to be able to. So when he's less than 6, b'chlal, he's barely going to be able to understand what you're teaching him. When he's 6, then it becomes easier, but you still have to work on him. And you still have to work on him because he's not going to just learn it all voluntarily on his own. Anyway, so the point is, at 6, you're already doing that. And the answer is, yes, sophie like a Torah. Sure, you stuff it into him like an ox. Mihu, but still, ain't a yored ime l'chayev, but to go to the extent of yored ime l'chayev, like Rashi had said, to whip him or to deny him food or other things like that, or like Marsha says, like to give up and say, okay, forget about him. He's obviously not cut out for learning. Let's teach him a trade. That's adla achashtem asershana, that we wait until he's 12. So there's no contradiction. The Iboisema, or another possibility, like Kasha, another possibility is there's no contradiction, halam mikra, halam mishnah. Because what Rav is telling of Shmuel bar Shilas refers to the age when the kids are old enough to start learning mikra, to start learning chumash and tanakh. Halam mishnah, as opposed to the takana of Usha, was as far as Mishnah, because you anyway only starting Mishnah with him when he's 10 years old. Amr Abaya, as in fact Abaya says that we know there are different ages for these things. He says, Umrali Aim, my mother told me, and we've had before that when he says his mother, he doesn't mean his actual mother passed away in childbirth. He means his foster mother who raised him. All over Shas, he quotes statements and he quotes statements in her name. So she says, Bar Shislamikra, a boy 6 years old or in his sixth year, is ready to be learning Mikra. Now, what about it says in the Sechta of it's been Chomesh Shonim Mikra? So one explanation is, in fact, the Ritva brings, and the Alter Rebbe says something similar in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that it means during his fifth year, his father starts to teach him at home. He has to first teach him Aleph Beis and Nekudas and to read, and to be able to read Tanakh, especially in those days, since the Nekudas weren't even written. And then, when he's 6 years old, is when you bring him to Cheder. So Ben Chomesh Shanu LeMikra would refer to what the father is doing at home during the kid's fifth and sixth years. And then, when he's six, then you'd be bringing him to Cheder. And Tosfos says over here that, yeah, the Bar Shis means when he actually turns 6 years old. On the other hand, there are different Lefoshim that say that maybe not. Maybe the 6 years old over here means in his sixth year, meaning beginning from his fifth birthday. And in that case, then the Mishnah in August, when it says Ben Chomesh Shanu LeMikra, would be saying the same thing over here as Bar Shis, meaning there the Mishnah is calling him five because he just turned five, and here it's calling him six because he's entering the sixth year. Anyway, so that's as far as Mikra. Bar Eser LeMishnah at age 10 is for learning Mishnayos. Which Tosfos says there's a difference because we're saying that the 6 year old or whatever it is in the sixth year, you're not only starting to teach him Tanakh in school, but you're actually stuffing it into him. Whereas the Bar Esther was saying you're not even doing that yet. You're just introducing him gradually to Mishnah at age 10. Incidentally, I mean, nowadays we start teaching kids Mishnayos long before age 10. We often start teaching them Gemara even before age 10. Different Gdolei Yisrael in different times were not happy with that. The Maharal, for example, was not very happy with that, and he actually established a cheder in Prague where they literally did what it says in the Mishnah, that they only started Mishnayos at 10 and Gemara at 15. However, various other Gdolei Yisrael, various other Achronim have talked about it and justified the way we do it, because one thing is, they say, listen, you know, unfortunately, you know, the situation is kids had to go to work at a young age in those days. If you don't start them on Gemara at a young age, then if you're going to wait till they're 15, most kids aren't even going to be in school by that point because they're going to have to be working to help support their families. So therefore, you really have no choice but to introduce Gemara to them younger. Anyway, continues the Gemara over here. So again, Abaya is quoting what his mother or his foster mother said about the ages for Mikra and Mishnah. And then she continues, a boy of 13 is ready to fast, Latanisa, Me'esles, is ready to fast the various fasts, Me'esles, for 24 hours. Now Rashi says what it means is, in other words, that we don't mean that when the kid is at, when the boy is actually 13, because there's no chiddush in that. We don't need a Abaya's foster mother to tell us a basic din that once the kid is 13, then he's chayav in mitzvahs. So what we mean is, Rashi says, in his 13th year. So already from a year before his bar mitzvah, then she's saying, and Abaya is quoting her approvingly, the boy would have to fast the entire fast. Before that, he only fast l'shoris, he only fast a certain amount of time. Tosfos, on the other hand, discusses and then says that not necessarily. She may actually mean 13. What's the chiddush? Of course, the 13-year-old has to fast the whole day. The point is that before that, they don't have to fast the whole thing. Before that, all they have to do is fast part of the time, but up till they actually turn bar mitzvah, then they don't have to fast the entire thing, just part of it. Nowadays, you have the popular notion that people say that three fasts before the bar mitzvah you fast. There doesn't really seem to be much of a source for that in the poskim. There is the idea that at younger age, that that gradually they start fasting more and more, and eventually they reach the point where they're fasting the whole thing. But here you have Rashi and Tosfos, you know, the argument between them, whether we're saying that they are obligated midrabanan to fast the entire fast sometime before the bar bas mitzvah, or whether we're saying that there's no such chiyuv midrabanan and we only have the chiyuv d'oraisa to start fasting the whole thing at bar bas mitzvah. Anyway, she says, but you know, for a girl, it would be 12. Where again, according to Rashi, we mean in her 12th year, and according to Tosfos, we mean that she turned 12 years old. So now Rashi says that the reason why the girl is earlier is because girls, since they don't learn Torah, it doesn't weaken their bodies as much. Therefore, they're stronger. Therefore, they're more able to fast at a year earlier. Rashi said, so Tosfos says you don't really need that. Given that we're saying that for a boy becomes bar mitzvah at 13 and a girl at 12, and the reason is because girls mature faster. And the Gemara elsewhere says, Bini Yisera, Nitna Meisha. So therefore, okay, so we're saying that a year before that, you already are Machanefer, and then comes her actual bas mitzvah, and she's required Minat Torah to fast the whole day. The Gemara continues, since we're mentioning something that Abaya quoted from his foster mother and something having to do with ages, so the Gemara mentions another thing in this connection. Amar Abaya, Omrali A, my mother, my foster mother told me, Hai bar shis tautalei akrava, if a 6-year-old was bitten by a scorpion, the yoma de mishlam shis, on the actual day that he turns 6 years old, loy chaye, he won't be able to survive that. The bite of a scorpion is very dangerous, and if it happens dafka on a 6th birthday, then we're saying he's not going to live. Now Rashi says it means unless we do the cure that she's going to go on to say now in the next line of the Gemara. Tosfos says that no, the cure we're talking about is a preventative to prevent him from getting bitten. Once he's bitten, Tosfos says that no, it means that he's a goner. My asvase, so what's the remedy, according to Rashi, after he was stung, according to Tosfos, to prevent him from getting stung? Merauta de dayach tivauta de shichra, you take the liver of an animal or a bird produces a juice called bile or gall, which is it's part of the digestive process. But most creatures have a gallbladder that stores the overflow. Anyway, so you take the bile from the daya chivarta, from a white daya. A daya is a kind of bird of prey. It's mentioned in this week's parasha as one of the non-kosher birds. It's some kind of vulture or kite or something like that. Anyway, of a white bird like that. B'shichra, you mix this bile with beer. Nishafye, you rub it on the kid's skin. V'nishafye, and you give it to him to drink. So according to Rashi, that will help cure him of the effect of the bite. And according to Tosfos, it'll prevent him from getting bitten, or maybe it'll prevent the effect of the bite from harming him in the first place. There's a very interesting thing in the Rishima, in the middle of a different topic, that Rebbe addresses, B'chal, that Rebbe is talking about over there, what an akrav symbolizes in Avoda. In a number of places, in Maimarim and Sichas, the idea is made that an akrav, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that an akrav's bite is cold, so it represents that a person feels a certain coldness to Avodas Hashem, which is a very dangerous thing. So therefore, so that Rebbe relates that to this Gemara over here. The kid is 6 years old. We're saying he should be going into cheder and starting to be stuffed full of Torah. Instead, on that particular day, he gets bitten by an akrav representing this coldness in Avodah. So it's very, very dangerous. If the beginning of his avoda is going to be in a way of coldness like that, what's going to happen? Loi chayeh, it's going to affect his chayus and avodas Hashem. So what do you do? So you use a, so he doesn't mention specifically about the bile, why daf the mat as opposed to anything else, but he says the daya is a bird that has very sharp vision. It can see very far. Rashi mentions on this week's parasha that it's also called ra'a, because shiroya b'yoser, it has very strong eyesight. So that connects with chokhmah, which chokhmah allows you to see clearly. The white also represents is the color of chokhmah. So you take that. In other words, you have to go back kind of to the source of Chochmah and work with that to overcome this coldness and this apathy to Avodas Hashem. You mix it with beer. The Rebbe goes on to say that beer, we find in other places in the Gemara, promotes growth in the body. So therefore, in other words, you have to make sure that you're teaching him a mentality in Avodah and in connection with the Eibishter that's going to cause him to grow over time, and then you rub it on the outside and on the inside, representing that in Chitzonius and in Pnimius, you're embedding this idea into him to overcome the coldness of the Akrav and to instead have the Chochmah and to instead connect to Hashem on the level of Chochmah, which is the level of Bittul, and then in other places we talk about that Chochmah is associated with Bittul, and that'll overcome the bad effect of the Akrav. The Rebbe also mentions over there something. He says, "Bederach halotze." He says it's almost like a joke. The word "akra." So you have in Pirkei Avos, you have every azkanomer, rots kalkanesher, rots katzvi, v'giber ka'ari. The initials of those are ayin kuf resh gimel. Akrav is almost that. It's only one less. So it hints at the idea that even if a person has most of that, he's mostly azkanomer, kalkanesher, etc., but he's missing that little bit. Then it can be a problem. Then there's danger of akrav. There's that danger of coldness in Avodas Hashem, and therefore he has to work to overcome that. Continues the Gemara. Hai bar shata the Torah le zibura b'yem de mishlam shata. Abaya continues, quoting this foster mother, a one-year-old baby, if a zibura, which is a bee, stings him b'yem de mishlam shata on the day when he turns 1 year old, loy chaye, he won't live. Then that's very dangerous for him. My asvose, how do you cure that? Atzvose de dikla b'maya. You take the ivy that grows around. You take the ivy that grows around a palm tree. B'maya, you mix it with water. You soak it in water. Neshafia, you rub it on the kid's skin. Then neshafia, and you give some of it to him to drink. The Rebbe doesn't explain this, but I guess there's a similar. I'm sure there must be a similar kind of thing that it represents something in avoda as well. Onward. Getting back to, we said about this business of that a kid starts cheder when he's 6 years old, or when he's in his 60 years, the case may be. So, Omer of Ketina, kol ha-machnes es b'noi pochus v'ben sheish, if a father brings his son to cheder when he's less than six, rots achra v'enim agir. He will eventually try to run after him to try to give him things to make him healthier and stronger, but he will never reach him, because the kid is going to be so weak and sickly that you're never going to be able to catch up. You're going to try after the fact to give him things. So in other words, the point is it's very dangerous to start bringing it to him to school before six or before he's in his sixth year, because he's really not ready for it yet. It'll affect his health. Ikadamri, another version is that what Rav Ketina said is chaver of rotzen achrav ve'ein magian oisay. His friends will run after him and never be able to catch up to him. In other words, he will be far ahead of them in knowledge of Torah. And the Gemara says that tavayu isnu, really both of them are true. Cholish v'gomer, he'll be weaker physically, but he'll be more knowledgeable in Torah. The iborisema hodekochish hodebari. Another possibility is it depends whether the kid is to begin with weak. Then don't bring him to cheder at such an early age. Wait till he's a little stronger. Hard to bury, as opposed to if to begin with he's a strong kid, then you can bring him. And that'll help him get ahead. That'll help him get ahead of his class, because he'll have that head start. And right. So the Alter Rebbe brings him in Hilchos Kama Torah that you bring the kid to cheder at 6 or 7 years old. The Alter Rebbe is learning over here, is learning like Tosfos that said earlier that 6 over here means 6 years old, not in his sixth year. So therefore, so at 6 years old, when he's turned 6, if he's strong, or when he's turned 7, if he's not so strong, then you bring him to cheder, and then the Malamed starts working.
I wonder if this is a connection to what we learned before, that they have to support a child until he's age 6 because he's attached to his mother.
So we said before, this father has to support him until 6 because he's attached to his mother. It may be connected with that. It might be that, taking him to cheder, where he's going to be away from his mother for a significant part of the day. Yeah, maybe the point is that would have a bad effect on his health. Could be. Okay. Another thing, going back to Takonas Usha, Omer of Yosi Bachanina, Ba'usha Hiskinu, here's another thing that Chachamim made a Takona in Usha. Suppose that a woman had nichsim alug. Now we've talked about many times before. Nichse Malug is property that she owns. Now, unlike Nichse Tzon Barzel, which are written into the Ksuba, and the husband assumes responsibility for them, he gets the Keren of them. He can use the Keren as he sees fit. He's only responsible that if he dies before her or he divorces her, then he has to either give back the items or reimburse her for the loss of value. Nichse Malug is they don't belong to him, but he's entitled to payers from them. So it's a field. He's entitled to the produce. If it's let's say a hotel or a bathhouse, then he gets the rental fees from it, etc. So suppose that she sold some of this Nichse Malug while her husband was alive. Then Umesa, and then she died. Habal Motzin Yadalakuchas, the husband can take that property away from the buyers, because he's considered the lekeach before them. It's considered that he bought it ahead of them, so therefore he has more of a shibud on it than that. His shibud came before theirs, and therefore he has the right to take it away from them. Now, on the other hand, what will have the good of her selling it is, if in fact her husband dies first, or if he divorces her, then the sale will be a valid sale. But if she dies before him, since he yaushins her, then he also yaushins her nichse malug, and the chachamim consider him not like a yodish, but rather like a lekeach. And therefore, we mentioned that briefly yesterday. We said that in that case, nevertheless, we still override his rights as a lekeach to allow the we said that the almana will be continued to be supported out of it, and the daughters, etc. So to that extent, we do override his rights as a lekeach. But basically, we're saying that. But basically, we're saying he's considered like a lekeach, and therefore he goes ahead of the other lekeachs. So the Gemara says, Ashkechid of Yitzchak by Yosef with Rav Abohu. One time Rav Yitzchak by Yosef met Rav Abohu to have a koi ba'uchlusa de'usha. Rav Abohu was standing in a big crowd of people in the city of Usha. So now the Sanhedrin had long since left Usha, but the city was still there. And now they met up in that city. Omerleis, Rav Yitzchak by Yosef asks, Man morad shmaita de'usha, who is the amora who taught about the Sakona of Usha? So this particular one we said, and maybe the other ones as well, the Girsa we had before us in the Gemara, is that at least the first one about the first one about supporting his children was in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina, but Rishonim have a Girsa instead of Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina like he. Anyway, so who is that? Man Morav Shmaita de Usha, who's the Amora who taught that? Omalei, so he answers him, Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina. And the Gemara says, Tonaminea, Boin Zimnin, he learned that from him 40 times. He learned this fact that Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina is the one who taught these dinim. He learned it over from him 40, he asked him to repeat it to him 40 times. The dummy like Mandaman Chaleba Kisse, and at that point he felt like it's in his pocket, like it's certain that he's not going to forget it. Okay. Going back to this business of that in Usha they made this takana that a person is required to support his children above age 6, and we said ultimately the halacha is not that we can force him to, but rather that we can put a lot of social pressure on him to. So in this connection, a little agadah, the pasuk, there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says Ashrei Shomrei Mishpat, happy are those who observe judgment, Oisei Tzedaka B'chol Eis, who do tzedaka at all times. So the question is, how can you possibly be doing tzedakah at all times? There aren't always poor people around. Dosh Rabbi Seinu should be Yavne. So our Chachamim in Yavne, Daushin, Ba'amu lo Rabbi Eliezer, others say Rabbi Eliezer, Daushin, Zeha Zon Bonav of Nosef, Chem Tanim. This refers to someone who supports his children when they're young. So therefore, that's a day and night thing. Now, it's considered tzedakah in the sense there's not an absolute obligation on him, like we said before. So he does that, and therefore that's considered tzedakah. And that's tzedakah that he's doing at all times because they're living at home 24/7. On the other hand, Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani says a different explanation. This refers to a person who raises a yosef, an orphan, a boy or a girl orphan in his house, maskian, and eventually he marries them off. So that's real oisah tzedakah b'chol eis. Marashah points out that the other one is not really b'chol eis, in the sense it only starts when they're 6 years old, as opposed to this, as soon as he brings them into his house, then he's constantly taking care of them, so therefore that's more, that can be considered more b'choles. Another thing, another pasuk in Tehillim says, hoin va'osher b'vesei, he has wealth and riches in his house, and his tzedakah endures forever. Which means, Rashi says, now the first half of the pasuk is implying that his money is not getting used up, but his tzedakah lasts forever. So how is that? If we're talking about regular tzedakah, that does take away from his money. So Rav Huna and Rav Chista. So Rav Huna and Rav Chista argue what that pasuk is referring to. Chad Amazal Loimet Torah Malanda. One says it refers to somebody who learns Torah and teaches it to other people. So therefore, in that sense, he's not losing anything. Adrabi, he's gaining. He himself is gaining because he understands the Torah better, and the other person is also gaining. So that's one. The other one says, Zach Kosev Torah and Rabbi Muksuvim Umashkila Machedim. The other one says it means that someone who writes out books of Tanakh and lends them out to other people, so therefore, so the Sfarim continue to exist, and he has the ongoing schus that people are learning, Torah from them. Another drasha on Psukim, since we mentioned, one of the drashas we had before, the one about Oisit Tzedakah B'Chaleis, we had Rav Shmuel Ben Achmeni, so we're going to have another one where Rav Shmuel Ben Achmeni says a drasha on a pasuk. The pasuk says, Eivonim Lavanecha, you should see sons for your sons, in other words, you should see that you'll have grandchildren, Shalom Aisa, it's Bracha, Shalom Aisrael, there'll be peace on Israel. So what is the two halves of the pasuk have to do with each other? Why? Because you have grandsons, will there be Shalom Aisrael? Amr Rav Shalom Levi. Once your sons have sons, then automatically Shalom Yisrael, not even sons, but children, Shalom Yisrael, automatically that will cause, there'll be peace among the Jewish people, because you'll never come to a situation of Chalitza or Yibum, where, after all, there can be a lot of conflict in that. First of all, Marisha says, when you have Chalitza, it involves spitting on the floor in front of him, at least appears in front of people, as like they're fighting with each other. In general, you have all kinds of potential conflict over one wants to do Yibum and the other one only wants to do Chalitza or whatever. So when your children have children of their own, when your sons have children of their own, then the whole thing is forestalled because then there's no need for Chalitza or Yibum. Rav Shmuel Ben Achmeni Amar, Kivin Shebonim Levanecha, what it means is once your children have children, Shalom al Dayonim Yisrael, the Dayonim will be at peace. There won't be any arguments about who the Nachla should go to. Now, the question is that Mephoshim asked, why would there be any arguments anyway? I mean, the rules of Nachla are pretty clearly stated in the Torah. So, okay, if your children don't have children, then still, you can look in the Psukim, and you can look in the Mishnayos in Bava Basra and see what the halacha is, who gets what. So there's a couple of interesting ideas about it. The Ritva says, the Ritva refers to a Gemara in Bava Basra over there in the Dinim of Nachlas that says that at one point the Tzedukim were arguing with the Chachamim about certain Dinim of Nachlas. Suppose that a person passes away. He had sons and he had daughters. Now let's say his son passed away and left a daughter behind. So now he has a daughter and a granddaughter. So the Tzedukim argued that those two should split the inheritance equally. And the Chachamim said that no, the daughter of the son takes the whole Nachla because she comes from the Koyach of her father. So now the Ritva says, what we're saying is, if your sons have sons, even the Tzedukim aren't going to claim that anybody other than them should get the Nachla. So therefore, the Dayanim are at peace. They don't wind up having to argue this point with the Tzedukim. Marsha says the vote is that when a person has sons, then yeah, he knows he's going to leave his Nachla to them, and that's that. But when he doesn't, then he has to start thinking to himself, do I necessarily want that whichever other relative is next in the Torah's line of inheritance should get it? Maybe not. Maybe I should be writing a document and giving it away to somebody else. And that can cause all kinds of issues. We're going to have later on in the Masechta, for example, where someone wrote a document giving his property to someone named Tuvia, and various people named Tuvia came to claim it. And ultimately, the Dayan has to decide which one is most likely that he meant. So that can cause all kinds of arguments, and the Dayan himself is not going to be at peace. Did I really make the right decision? So if you have Bonim Levanecha, then that whole thing is forestalled. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Zem Medrash Dorash Rabbi Lozer Lefnei Chachamim. We said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Lozer Ben Azariah gave the following Dorasha. Just like the boys, that we have two takonis, that the boys inherit and that the girls are supported, and therefore we said that's why the girls don't have the right to be supported, to be given food out of the estate until the father passes away. While he's alive, he's not required to. That was the whole thing he said in the Gemara, that he's not technically required to support his children beyond 6 years old. So the Gemara says, Yosef Rav Yosef Kameh de Rav Hamnuna. Rav Yosef was one time sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Hamnuna. The Yosef Rav Hamnuna Vakama. Rav Hamnuna was sitting and saying the following din. Kishem she'ena bonim yoshin element akarka. Just as the boys yarshin only from land, kach ena bonus nizonis element akarka. So the same thing, daughters get supported only out of land. Meaning this that we're talking about, that the daughters after the father passes away are entitled to mezonis, would only be if the father left land and then you sell some of that land for that purpose. So the Gemara says, Ova shalei kol alma. Everybody started yelling at Rav Hamnuna. What do you mean? Deshovik aro, the yarsile boni? You're telling me that only somebody who leaves behind land that his sons inherit him, the loishovik aro, la yarsile boni? And if he doesn't leave any land, if he only had metalphilin, then his sons don't inherit him? That's not how it works. So what do you mean that the sons inherit only from Kaita? Omele Rav Yosef, but Rav Yosef says, V'dilmak subas v'nin dichrin ka'omamar. Rebbe, maybe you're talking about specifically about the takana of subas v'nin dichrin. We're not talking about the regular Yerusha Minatora. Of course, that applies equally to Kaita and the Talmud. We're talking about the special takana of subas v'nin dichrin, which we touched on in the Mishnah. We're going to talk about it. Later. We're going to talk about it a little later. A little later in our perek, and we're also going to talk about it in more detail later on in the Masechta. So we talked about it. The wife has a ksuba. Now suppose that she passes away while her husband is alive. Minatora, or even originally midrabanan. That's it. The husband yarshins that money and it's forfeit. The Chachamim made a takana called Ksubas Benin Dichrin, that instead, if she has any sons from that husband, then they yarshin her Ksuba, they yarshin the amount equal to her Ksuba, and then the rest of the estate is split up evenly among all the Yoshin. So let's say, in other words, the guy had two wives, Rachel and Leah, let's say. So Rachel passed away while he was alive. So Rachel's sons are going to get the amount of their mother's ksuba, let's say 200 zuz, and then the rest of the estate is going to be split between Rachel and Leah's sons. So now that takes place only from Kauka. That is not collected from the Talplin. So Rav Hamnuna, maybe you mean that particular Takana is that you collect only from Karka, and therefore you're saying that in the same way the Takana, and that's one of the Tanoi Ksuba, in the same way the daughters after the father passes away are supported only out of Karka, because you're saying, in other words, there's a similarity between those two Takanas, like Rav Elazar ben Azariah is saying in the Mishnah. Omalei, and Rav Hamnuna says, yes, Mar, de Gavre Rabahu, you who are a great person, who are Taman Chacham, Yoda, my Kamina, you understand what I was talking about, so you're not like everybody else who yelled and misunderstood. You understood correctly what I'm saying. And we find sometimes, by the way, in Shas, we find sometimes that the Amoroyim would say things in a way that is a little bit elliptical, like they're leaving out something because they don't want to just spoon feed you everything. You need to work on it. So the same way over here, he used this expression. He expected that everybody else should be able to understand what he means. And now, he's happy that Rabbi Yosef understands it, but if only the other Talmudim understood it understood it the same way. By the way, the Rambam mentions that in the early time of the Gaonim, they made a takana that many things throughout Shas that we say that can be collected only from Karka can in fact be collected from the Talmud as well. Historians say that the reason is because by the time these Gaonim were around, this is what we're talking about in the 8th or 9th century, at that point the Arabs weren't, the Muslims that had conquered Babel a couple hundred or 200 years before that, and they imposed very high taxes on any non-Muslims who owned land. So that caused a lot of Jews to give up until that point. Most Jews farmed for a living. You find throughout Shas that your average person owned karka. You have, for example, a line in Yuvamis that says that a person that doesn't have karka is not really a full person. But now, as a result of these new rules that the Muslims imposed, then more people found that it's not really economical to have land anymore, where we have to pay such high taxes to them, and therefore they sold off their land and went into various other kinds of business. You have the famous association of Jews with money lending and with other kinds of financial business that really started around this time. So therefore the idea is that these Gaonim said, so we can't assume that the average person owns karka anymore, and therefore they made a takana that many things that are that up until now could be collected only from karka can in fact be collected from the talmudim as well. However, the Rambam says that when it comes to this matter of subas v'nin dichrin, it doesn't seem that the takana was changed. It doesn't seem that they made any new takana. Therefore, the Rambam says subas v'nin dichrin still retains the original rules and it's collected only from karka. Which is probably why you don't view much of it nowadays, because again, not everybody has karka. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Chir Bar Yosef, Rav Zon Mechiti Dalia. Rav supported some people from wheat that was in the Aliyah. Now, what it means is, in other words, there were girls whose father had passed away, and they were still below the age of Begeres, and they weren't married yet. So therefore, they're entitled to Mezonis out of their father's estate. And Rav gave them out of the Tautlin. He took wheat from the Aliyah from that was kept in the attic and used it for their Mezonis. So what's going on over here? Now, didn't we just say that it's only from Karka? So, Iboyalu, so the question is, Tarnosahavia, was it not really Zon, which is that he's giving them food on an ongoing basis for their maintenance, but it was really Tarnosah, meaning that it's really money that they're being given to use towards their Nadin for the wedding. That can be collected out of a Talpin, because it's only Mazon that was saying that can be collected only from Karka, but Tarnosah can come even from a Talpin. So was it really Tarnosah? Umay Aliyah Me'iluya Da'ab, and the word Aliyah that Rabbi Bar Yosef says means that he took it from that he had them give it based on the estimation of what the father would have wanted to do, like how generous we can expect the father would be as far as wedding expenses for his daughters. The Chiddush Shmuel, in which case Rav would be doing like what Shmuel says, the Amar Shmuel, the Parnosa Shomen Ba'ab. When it comes to Parnosa, when it comes to this matter of wedding expenses and all, we go according to what the father would normally do. Meaning, in other words, we figure out how we ask around by people who knew the father. What kind of person was he? More generous with these kinds of things? Was he more stingy? If he married off previous daughters, how much did he spend on their weddings? And based on that, we put together an estimate of how much he would have been willing to spend on this daughter's wedding, and then that's the amount we give her. So is that what it means? Or maybe it means actual mezonis, that she needed food on an ongoing basis. My Aliyah, and then in that case, what's Aliyah? Now we said that Mizonis comes only from Karka. So in that case, how is he taking from wheat that was left as part of the estate? Then the word Aliyah would have to mean Midvorim Toivim Shenemru Baliyah. It would be based on the good words that were said in the Aliyah. And Aliyah is not always an attic. Sometimes it's just the second floor of a house. And in those times, that was often a gathering place when you had, not just for wheat. We're talking about, in other words, that we find in many places in Shas, the Chachamim would gather in an Aliyah. The idea would be, in other words, like downstairs would be like the smaller rooms of the house, and then with your big living room or your big dining room or whatever, a place for everybody to assemble, would be on the second floor. So does it mean that at one point the Chachamim assembled in an Aliyah and said the following din? The Chachamim made a takana in the Aliyah, in a way over there that's publicly known. That not like we said in the Mishnah, and not like Rav Hamnuna had said, but rather that the girls are entitled to Mezonis even out of Metalpin, not just out of Karka. So was Rav basing himself on that? So what is it? So again, to recap, the question is it that it was in fact Mezonis, and Rav disagrees with what Rav Hamnuna said before, and says that in fact the girls are entitled to Mezonis from Metalpin, and not just from Karka? Or does he still agree with Rav Hamnuna, and this wasn't actually Mezonis, it was rather Parnosa, which means expenses for her wedding and for her Nadin, and in that case, then Aliyah means based on an evaluation of what the father would have wanted to do. So the Gemara says, Toshma, did a banoi achur did a priva abba have him a talpman the yasmi? Rabbanoi, the brother of Chiva Abba, was taking care of Metalflin of Yisoyim. So they had appointed him as an apotropos, as a trustee over these Metalflin. Also, the Kamei de Shmuel, so they came to Shmuel because they wanted some of that for their Mezonis. Omele Zil Zun. and Shmuel tells him, go support them. This is talking about daughters again. So they're entitled to mezonos based on tnoi tzuba. So therefore, go support them out of those metalkin. Now, my lava mezoni. Now, b'pashtus, the word zun means mezonos, means to give them their ongoing maintenance. B'chidr dietzchok ha-yosef spirale. And that would mean that Shmuel holds, like, that would mean that Rechia ba'aba, rather. Yeah, that's Shmuel. That would mean that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yitzchok ha-yosef, that they can be supported out of metalkin. Tosfos points out, by the way, that when it comes to what we're reporting, Rav Zon Michita Dalia, we might be using the word Zon more loosely. We might mean it for Parnosa rather than Mezonis. But here, where Shmuel is clearly saying a Psak Din, he's telling Rabbanoi, go Zil Zun, then it clearly has to mean Mezonis, otherwise you would have to specify otherwise. So therefore, so that shows that he holds like a Yitzchok HaYosef. And the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Still, it might not have been for Mezonis. It might have been that the claim was that they wanted Parnosa to pay for the expenses for their wedding. Or Shmuel, a Taimei. And then Shmuel is going according to his own Shitta in this regard. Because we just said before that Shmuel says, when it comes to Parnosa, we evaluate what the father would have wanted to do. So, now later on in the Masechta, by the way, we're going to talk about that there are scenarios where, what if we don't know? What if we have no way of knowing what the father would have wanted to do? Then what we say is that each girl is entitled to Isur Nechosim, 1/10 of the Nechosim, and we'll talk about the details of what if there's more than one girl, and how that all works out. But Shmuel is saying over here that that's only as a last resort. To begin with, we figure out what the father would have wanted, whether it's more or less than 10% of his Nechosim, and we go based on that. So the Gemara continues, Haba Uga b'Nahada, it happened once in Nahada, that there were Yesoimois, girls who were claiming Mezonos, by Tznoi Tzuba, and they were claiming from Metalpin, the Dayonim of Nahada, Paskin, that they can collect from Metalpin, the Pumbedisa, the Agvi Rav Chana Bar Bizna. Similarly, such a thing happened in Nahada and Rav Chana in Pumbedisa, and Rav Chana Bar Bizna paskin and gave the Yisoimus out of the Talmud. But Amalahu Rav Nachman, but Rav Nachman tells them that's wrong. We just said before that's different character. So in other words, the halacha is not like Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef. Zilu Ahadu, go return it, because what are you doing? You're taking from Yisoimim. After all, at this point, Yisoimim, their brothers, have inherited the property. You're telling them that you're telling them to take from those metalpin, and they're required of Yalacha to give to their sisters. And you can't do that. You can't just take away from Yisoimim.
But it's going to the same place.
Yeah. No, but it's not, because one's for Yisoimim and one's for Yisoimos. The takana is the boys are going to inherit that we know in Torah, yeah, and the takana is that they're supposed to support their sisters. But the supporting is supposed to be done from a tap. They're supposed they're only required to do it from karka. No karka. If there's no karka, then they're not required to because not to the so Rashi points out, by the way, that it's true that the ksuba itself can be collected from. That it's true that the so what it is. The ksuba itself is collected only from karka, at least until the takana of the ge'onim that we were mentioning before. The point is, in general, why are things collected only from karka? Because when a person has a shtar, as the ksuba is, then that's the only thing they know they can rely on is karka. Karka can't be hidden or stolen or whatever, so therefore they're only relying on that. So therefore, so now, we said before, Rav Yitzchok Bar Yosef holds, and we said maybe Rav holds like that as well, that no, when it comes to Mezonis, we make an exception, but Rav Nachman is saying there's no such exception. When it comes to collecting from Yisoimim, we can only go, you can tell them, for example, you can convince them, listen, it's your sisters, go to Fnim HaShos HaDin with them or something, but to actually take it away from them, Mitzad HaDin, you can't do that. So therefore, he tells them, Zilu Ahadu, go return it, go undo what you did. V'iloy, and if you don't, I am going to take away your mansions to pay off the debt, because you can't take away from your Yisoimim without valid cause. Tosfos points out that, first of all, Rav Nachman evidently is considering them toya b'dvar mishka. What they did the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about, you have various cases. Sometimes we say that a dayan has judicial immunity. He may have passed him wrongly, but fine, what's done is done, because he's a dayan, and he's smicha, etc. But if he's toya b'dvar mishnah, if he made a mistake in something that's blatantly, that says clearly in a mishnah otherwise, then we don't say that. So Rav Nachman considers them to be toya b'dvar mishnah. Tosfos also points out that apparently the Balei Dinim wouldn't have listened to Rav Nachman himself, which is why Rav Nachman himself is not going over to the Yesoimim, or the Yesoimos rather, and telling them, we have to undo this. He's telling the Dayanim of Nahagah and Rav Chana Bar Biznim for Bedissa that you have to undo it because they're not going to listen to me, but they will listen to you because you're the local Dayan. Continues the Gemara. Why will take away your mansions from you to pay it? Rav Ami and Rav Asi several amazing in Metaltalin. Rav Ami and Rav Asi also thought that the daughters should be supported out of Metaltalin. And again, not like what we just said. Omelhu Rav Yaakov Be'idi, but Rav Yaakov Be'idi tells them, no. Milsa did Rav Yochanan, but Rishlokish loy Ogdaba Ogda. Something that Rav Yochanan and that neither Rav Yochanan and Rishlokish, who were the great Talmid Chacham of the previous generation, they didn't do that. They always said that you could collect only from, they collect only from Karka. Atun Ogdun Be'ogda. You want to do differently? You want to actually paskin that they should collect from the Talmud, also like Rabbi Yitzchok by Yosef says, if even Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish didn't hold that that's valid on the halacha, then what makes you think that you know more than that? So the Gemara continues, Rabbi Elazar saw the Lameza in the Talmud. Rabbi Elazar thought the same thing, that we should support the daughters out of the Talmud. Amal afon of Rabbi Shimon ben Oyakim, Rebbe, Yedeya ani b'chosha in midas ad-din ata oisa. I know that you're not doing it with sad ad-din. I know that you're aware that the din is that it's only from Karka. I know you're doing it only out of Rachmanus for these girls, because otherwise what are they going to live off of? Ella, but you should be careful saying that they have to do it. Because the Talmidim may see it and think that the halacha for future generations is you have to do it, mitzadadin, and it's not so. So the Gemara gives another example. The Gemara says, Ahuda Osala Kamedin of Yosef. There was a case like that that was brought before of Yosef, again, where you have Yosomus that want Mizonus from because of Tanoi Ksuba. Omalahu, so Rav Yosef tells the Yosomim, Hovala Mitamri Dal Budya, give her for her Mizonus from dates that are on the map. After they harvested dates, they would leave them on mats for a while to dry. So give her mizonus out of that. Omole Abaya says, how could that be? Those are metaltalin. Ilu balchoyv haba. If that had been a regular balchoyv, where a balchoyv is able to collect from the chosim shubavim, even though mi have a yohiv like mar, would you Rebbe allow him to collect from the metaltalin like that? Even a Balchoy was a stronger shibud, still can't collect from the Talplin of Yisraelim. He can collect from the Talplin when the original Balchoy is alive, but not when the original Loiva is alive, but after he passed away, Yisraelim, you can collect only from Karaka. So how all of a sudden by this Yisraelim are you saying differently and saying that you can collect from these dates that have already been picked? Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef answers him, D'chazil Budya Kamina. I don't mean they're actually on the mats. I mean that they're ready to be picked and be placed on the mats. Well, you might ask, so what? So say Kolaim lives as Kigozuzami. Still, don't we have a rule that when something is ready to be harvested, it's considered as if it was already harvested? And Tosfos points out there is in fact a machlokas about that between the mayor and the chachamim and other places in Shas, but still the Gemara is assuming that's how it is, that is the halacha. So once they're ready to be picked, they should be considered already metaltalin. And the answer is ditzricha ledikla kamina. Rabbi Yosef explains, I don't mean that they're fully. What I mean is they still need the tree. They still need to stay on the tree. In other words, the Ritzvah explains like this. You could pick them now. They'd be perfectly good. But if you leave them on the tree for a little while longer, they will be even better. So therefore, they can still be considered part of Karka, because if you leave them on the tree now, then they'll still improve. So therefore, they're considered Karka, and therefore the Yisraelis can collect out of that. I'm calling them that they're ready for the mats in the sense that if you were to pick them now, then yeah, they're already ready to fall on the mats and to be harvested. So that's the thing. So the Ritvar is what the Gemara is saying is that these dates we have to have a time when these dates are still considered karka. Otherwise, we're saying the Yisomas are not entitled to collect from them. So what we're talking about. So now the Gemara is explaining based on the Ritvar that we're saying. That it's not that they're premature. If they were not yet mature at all, then he wouldn't be calling them chazi lebudya. He wouldn't be calling them that they're ready to be harvested and to fall onto the mats. They used to put mats on the ground when they harvest dates, so they don't just fall on the ground and get them and get dirt. What he means is that's what the Ritva is explaining. that many people would pick them now. It's perfectly legitimate to pick them now. They would be perfectly good to eat if you did that. But on the other hand, this is the situation is if you leave them on the tree for a few more days, then they'll be even better. They'll be even sweeter or even larger or whatever. So therefore, in that sense, they still need the tree. It's not like they're complete. It's not like they don't need to be on the tree at all. There still is value in having them attached to the tree. Therefore, they can still be considered karka rather than matalka.
Even though in principle,
they are on the tree. That's the thing. They're still growing on the tree. So we said, that's what we're saying. Chazal the Bordia. They're ready to, if you wanted to harvest them now, you could. You could spread out the mats and harvest them now, and they would be perfectly good to eat. But the situation is, they're still growing on the tree, and if you leave them growing on the tree for a few more days, they'll be even better. Therefore, they're still considered karka. Therefore, the Yisraelis still have a right to them for their mizrahs. Everyone?